Talk. This is your host, Pastor Carl Bastian, coming to you from kidology.org, where our mission for over 25 years has been to equip and encourage you in your children's ministry. That has always been our mission, and it's a very strategic one because I understand, as a pastor myself, that you need both. You need to be equipped and encouraged. If we just encourage you, but you're discouraged, you won't have the energy to use the creative ideas or the helpful ideas because you just need some wind in your sails. But if you're just given encouragement, but not some practical how-tos, that won't work either. So, you know, you need both. You need practical ideas, solutions, tips. You need to be equipped, but you also just need to know you can do this, all right? It's worth it. You need that encouragement. And so that's my goal every time in every workshop I do, every podcast, every article I write. It's to equip and encourage you. And I hope that I'll do that again on the podcast here today. So thanks for joining me as we spend a little time talking Kidman here on Kidman Talk. Hey, I'm super excited about today because I put out in our Facebook group that I was just going to be answering your questions on today's podcast. So we're going to cover a plethora of topics today. And yes, I do know what plethora means. And if you know what movie that's from, drop that in the comments. That is a movie quote. So we're going to be talking about a variety of things. And those of you who get your name dropped on the show today, my team will be messaging you on Facebook to get your address. And if you'd like, we will actually mail you a copy of this book. It's called A Bright Idea. And it is a autobiographical leadership book that I wrote when Kidology hit its 25th birthday. This is a book you cannot get in our store. It's something that we use just as a thank you for people who support our ministry. I think you can go to kidology.org, and I'm going to do this right on the fly right here. It's kidology.org, and I think it's, is it 25 years? I shouldn't be doing this right on the fly. Is it 25 years? Yes, it is. I remembered right. If you go to kidology.org/25 years, it talks about the gift of this book. And I actually started writing this when we hit our 20-year anniversary. And then I kind of got stuck. I was looking for some pictures and historical documents that I wanted to include in here. And some of them I couldn't find. And so this was one of those projects that I just kind of got stuck because there were some things I really wanted to put in here that were just hard to find. And then we got to 25 years and Teresa, one of my most awesome, I was going to say oldest, she wouldn't like that, longest lasting employees of Kidology. She said, Carl, we're hitting 25 now. You might want to finish that book. And so I cranked and I finished it. And so you'll really enjoy this on many levels. It's a personal autobiography, but it's not like, you know, my childhood and everything. Although there's a little bit in here about early business ventures, even a secret agency that I formed as a child. But it goes through how Kidology started, and it has pictures of the early versions of the website, some old business cards, just some really fun stuff. But it's a leadership book because I share the leadership principles that I learned along the way. And one reason I don't have this in the store is there's some stuff in here, you know, failures too, things that I don't want everybody to know. So it's kind of a book I don't want to sell thousands of copies. I just want to give away maybe hundreds, and I don't even think we've given away hundreds yet. So it's kind of a treasure. It's kind of the inside track to my life and Kidology, and it's called A Bright Idea, The Story of Kidology. So I'm going to mail one of these to those of you who helped contribute to the podcast today. So I guess this would be our sponsor today. And those who have gotten this have said they really, really liked it. In fact, many people have said they couldn't put it down. They read it in one seating, and it's only about 100 pages. So you'll enjoy that. Thank you, those of you who contributed today to the podcast. So we're going to dive in. If you're not a part of our Kidology Facebook group, please do join. I always say this, there are lots of kids ministry Facebook groups. I think I'm a member of most of them, and they're great for posting, you know, questions about your ministry. I love the people who post the same question in like every group. I don't recommend that because people like me, they get that question, they get the notification, and you're busted because we know you posted that idea like 8 times in 8 groups. If you're going to do that, stagger them, all right? So that way you don't hit all the same people at the same time. You hit different people in different groups at different times. Just a little social media advice for you. So, that just my 2 cents there. But our group is unique in that you can ask some of those same questions, but you're going to get inside direct access to me. We're going to post things that are on Kidology to help you out with whatever it is that you're wrestling with. But we also post the content from Kidology, and Kidology is huge. I mean, there is so much website content. Kidology's been around for over 25 years now, growing every week. I sometimes want to say every day, but there's probably a day here and there that we weren't adding something. And so there is just a ton of content. And if we get any complaints, it's that people have a hard time finding stuff sometimes because there's just so much in there. And so I'm often just featuring in the Facebook group, just bringing things to your attention. And so being in that group helps you go like, I didn't know you had full children's ministry manuals. I didn't know there was a preschool curriculum. I didn't know you had discipleship materials. I didn't know you had. And so we're always just highlighting things in there. So it's another way in addition to our newsletter. So if you're not in that Facebook group, go to kidology.org/Facebook. That's just an easy redirect to our Facebook group, and make sure you're a part of that. And it also gives you a place you can ask me questions, and I'd love to answer them like I'm going to today. And by the way, thank you for those of you who are members of Kidology. If Kidology is a benefit to you, if you appreciate the podcast and the different resources from Kidology, the best way you can say thank you is to support our ministry through being a member of the website. It's so affordable. It's $99 for a quarter, $300 for a year, and you get so much from that. All the resources, all the training, all the recruiting tools, a full curriculum. Some people are spending $1,000 or more a year on Kids Church curriculum. You get all that free. So it's a way to support our ministry, and it's also a tangible way to say, I believe in what you're doing. Keep doing it. So if you're not an all-access member of Kidology, do that today. Just go to Kidology, hit join. If you can't afford that, you're legit, you're at a small church, a church plant, you're a student, you're a missionary, please hit that scholarship button, donate whatever you can, and make sure you become an all-access member of Kidology. So let's dive into some of these questions today that you guys submitted, and let's just do it, all right? So I'm going to dive in here, and right off the bat, Kate asked, what are we doing to reach out to foster and adoptive families? First of all, hey, I am an adoptive dad. I could take the whole podcast to tell that amazing story. On April Fool's Day, 2006, went to rescue a baby in a crisis situation, and the birth mom said, you want to keep him? And I went home with the baby that day, and of course, the adoption wasn't final that day. It was a 9-month legal process, but Luke never left my home, and a wonderful story. And so I am an adoptive dad. In fact, if you go to kidology.org/adopted, I ended up writing a one Sunday lesson that goes through the adoptive parents in the Bible from Moses all the way to Jesus, and what it means to be adopted, the purpose of adoption, and ultimately explains how we all are adopted. So what are we doing to reach out to adoptive families or foster parents? Now, this answer may sound a little, I don't know, maybe you won't like it at first, but I don't target families with these unique needs in my church. Now, a lot of this is going to depend on the size of your church. The larger your church, the more you can have targeted ministries to foster parents, adoptive parents, single parent, children of divorce. There's so many categories of people with unique needs. And I'm not saying you shouldn't target those groups. When you can, it's wonderful. I'm going to use a dangerous analogy, all right? In politics, so often people segment people into groups and say, what are you doing for this group or this group or this group, whether it's a gender or whether it's race? And the wiser approach is to push policies that help everybody and not segment groups. Now, there are unique needs to every group. And when we can and when we're able, it's wonderful to do that. But the first line of defense, the first thing we should be doing is creating a ministry that meets the needs of everyone. My ministry's mission statement, and there's a lot on Kidology about developing mission and vision and goals, but our church's mission statement is we want every child, and by every, I mean every, all right, whether they are adopted, whether they're foster, whether their parents are divorced, whether they are generic normal kid, which there's no such thing. We want every child who comes through our doors to feel loved, to come to know Christ, and to find a place where they can grow through fun and life-changing experiences. That is my goal. I want them to feel loved. And then you break down with your leadership team, how do we make kids feel loved? I want them to come to know Christ. So that means I'm going to share the gospel clearly and regularly, and I'm going to follow them up. And I want them to grow. How? That's broken down through fun and life-changing experiences. Some ministries are all about growth, and there's no life change. Some churches are all about life change, but they don't make it fun. And there's got to be that balance, just like equip and encourage I mentioned. It's got to be fun and life-changing. So that's my goal for every kid that comes to my church. Now, then you've got to have a reporting mechanism where families can communicate what their needs are. Recently, I made a survey form for families to fill out. I actually bribed the kids with some night vision goggles for our spy theme, where I encourage families to scan a QR code and communicate with me. Tell me about your kids. Tell me about what their needs are. How can I pray for your families, or anything I need to know about your child that would make it easier for me to minister to them? And through that communication mechanism, I can learn my kid's adopted, my kid's a foster kid, my kid's ADHD, my kid's, you know, got this issue. And then I called each of those families. I talked to the parents. And it's so through those mechanisms on an individual basis, I can find out what's going on in that home. I can gain a greater understanding. So I don't just see a boy and view him as misbehaving. I can view him and view his behavior through a filter and a context of understanding what his unique life situation is, and view him with an extra measure of grace or understanding. So does that make sense? So first, you need to make sure that you are addressing the broad needs, and you're making an environment where all are loved, all are welcome, all you're ministering to all of them. And then you have to create mechanisms to find out what those unique needs are, and making sure parents know it's okay to let you know, hey, my kid's situation is different. My kid's situation is unique. And then when people come and ask you, hey, what are you doing for this need? They may be a potential leader. And often I'll say, we're not doing anything special for that family or that group. But I'd love to. Is that something the Lord has laid on your heart? Because sometimes you've got a potential leader for a ministry that may be something that they could help spearhead or be part of, join you in praying about that. And that may be something that your church can do in the future. All right. Thank you, Kate. Great, great question. And I'm guessing that is something that you have a personal connection to, either as a mom or as a children's pastor. And so thanks for asking that question. Gordon asked, how do you move an average church member from children's ministry as a babysitting mindset to children's ministry as a disciple-making ministry? All right, that is a great question, and I think that's one that everybody can relate to. And I like to push back on that, because a little bit, and Gordon, I know you, you're a friend, so I'm not saying this personally to you, but I push back on that a little bit because there's a little bit sometimes in children's ministry as a whole, and that's why I'm saying I'm not pushing back on Gordon personally, but it's children's ministry as a whole. Sometimes there's a little bit of a martyr mindset that us as children's ministry, you know, leaders, we see children's ministry for what it is. So I don't have to tell you what it is. But everyone else out there, they see it as babysitting. They see it as childcare. And how do we get them to change their mind? And what I, and my answer is, that's our job. Our job is to champion that. And it is to model that. And when we get opportunities, and whenever we have a platform, whether it's preaching or doing announcements or speaking at a congregational meeting, through the articles we write, through the Facebook posts that we make, any platform we given that we're given, we have to champion the value of children's ministry, the view that Jesus had of children's ministry through the videos that we put together, the scriptures that we share. That is a drum that we have to always be pushing, and we push it in a positive way, not in a negative, correcting, preaching. We have to do it in a positive way, and we have to constantly be championing that and modeling it and understanding that there are some people who will never get it. There are some senior pastors who will never get it. And then there has to be a little bit of, that's why I'm here. That's my job. I'm the one who's going to model that. And then I have to surround myself with leaders who get it. I'm going to develop a leadership team of people who get it. And if someone doesn't get it, if their concept is we're just watching the kids while ministry takes place somewhere else, then they're not going to be leaders. They're always going to be rank and file soldiers in the Lord's army, but they're never going to be lieutenants or generals. And we're going to promote the people who get it. And it's going to happen during our Sunday morning huddles. That's why those are important, because we champion, we remind the kids, and we can do it in humorous ways. Some of you may have seen on my Facebook page recently, our church is doing a worship night. And of course, I was asked to provide childcare. And I always say, I don't do childcare, but I will do a worship night for kids. So I made graphics and promo. We're doing a raise 'em, praise 'em worship night for kids. And I made graphics. We made the name raise 'em, praise 'em. So it's not that there's a concert of prayer for the adults and childcare is provided. In fact, you might have seen it. My graphic for raise 'em, praise 'em kids worship night. And then it has in fine print along the bottom, adult care is provided in the main auditorium. I got to tell you, my worship leader thought that was hysterical. My lead pastor had no issue with that. He cracked up. He even said in staff meeting, oh, Carl, I loved your adult care provided in the sanctuary. And I put in parentheses, adults can worship too. All right. And so it's kind of my way of flipping it and saying, instead of saying adult worship night, and there'll be worship for the kids too, because, you know, kids can worship too. I just flip it and say, yeah, adults can worship too. And it's a humorous and a fun way of just changing the narrative and saying, yeah, it's not that kids can worship too. It's that adults can worship too. So it's just something you have to constantly champion and do it in a way that's fun, that's upbeat. And part of the way you demonstrate you're not childcare is by never using that language and by always doing it with excellence and bringing your A game, referring to it as ministry and letting people know by how you conduct yourself. One of the reasons that I have always dressed up and dressed professional, unless I'm in a costume, I wear a shirt and tie. I've always tried to conduct myself professionally. So people don't go, oh, he's just the kids pastor. I'm like, no, I'm the pastor of the kids. This is a professional role. Now, ladies, you're not going to wear a shirt and tie. I get it. But I'm saying conduct yourself professionally as the leader of the children's ministry. And don't be running around, you know. I was going to say wearing T-shirts, kids ministries. I know a lot of them have cool T-shirts, and I'm not trying to diss that. But I think you get the spirit of what I'm saying. You model it, you champion it, and it becomes contagious and people will get it. Bottom line, make sure your leaders get it and it will become contagious. And in a very positive, friendly way, without judgment, just say, no, this is our ministry to kids. All right? Great, great question. All right, Tiffany asked about effectively ministering to special needs kids. Now, that is a broad category. I want to make sure that you all go to kidology.org/invite-them-in. Just all, no spaces, obviously, it's a URL. Invite them in. Doug Olson, great children's pastor, collaborates with me on the IT Bible curriculum. He spent decades in special needs professionally in the public school system. He wrote this book, a blueprint for you for inviting special needs kids into your ministry. Please download that book. It's like $10 or something like that. Download that. Phenomenal resource for special needs in your children's ministry. And special needs is a great opportunity. Churches that fully embrace a special needs ministry can have incredible potential to reach families in the community who don't even go to church because most churches are not equipped to handle kids with special needs. But if you're going to promote a special needs ministry, you have to be ready because you will attract these families who are actively looking for a church who can have the capacity to meet the needs of their kids. But what you do first is you start with the kids that God has brought you. And most likely you already have kids in your church who have some special needs, whether it's just ADHD, you know, whether it's some sensory needs, have headphones, you know, in, the quieting ones in the back of your room on hooks for kids that just need it quiet. Whether it's launching a buddy system so that the kids can be assigned to someone who just is their buddy, who's got, you know, you have a route that they can take the kids for a walk if they just need a break from the room. Some churches have a sensory room and a special needs room. I prefer integration. I want the kids in the room with the kids. You meet with the parents and find out what their needs are. If someone comes and asks, again, they might be someone who would be willing to lead a special needs ministry. In the past, we've had a special needs ministry, and we just called it Friends, and we just assigned a teenager to a child. And a lot of times, the child didn't even always know that that teenager was assigned to them. We didn't want them to feel awkward or whatever. They just thought, like, this kid's like my buddy, you know, and he hangs out with me. So I would encourage you to look up, download that book, read that through, and it can be wonderful. It's a very broad category, but it starts with meeting the needs of the kids that God has already brought you. And as you do that, then you'll be ready for maybe what's next and what God would have you do next. All right, Dana. How do we effectively prepare our kids and parents to move the kids' ministry to youth ministry? All right, that's another broad one. But here's what I would say it starts with. You've got these kids for while they're in children's ministry. And our culture today is very transitory. I remember when I used to have kids for their full elementary. Now I've got kids for 2 or 3 years. And it's less where I can count on, I've got 6 years to pour into these kids. I would take some time, some meditation time, some focused retreat time, even if it's just, you know, going out to a coffee shop with a pad of paper, and ask yourself this question. What do I want to accomplish with the kids in my ministry before they leave? And by before they leave, I don't just mean before they go to youth. Before they leave, before they move away, before I lose the opportunity to pour into them and say, what are some basic things? I want to have had the opportunity to lead them to Christ. I would love to see that they get baptized. I would love to see them know the basics of the Christian faith. Let me encourage you to check out kidology.org/awesome. Adventure. Maybe your goal is that you want them to go through a discipleship book like Awesome Adventure, where you know they've gone through this discipleship tool with you, with their parent, with a loving adult. Because remember, one of the only common denominator of the studies that they've done for kids who stay faithful to the Lord from childhood through adulthood is that they had an adult other than a parent who showed an interest in their spiritual development. And so, and then make those goals and decide that that's going to be my goal. These are the things I want them to know. Is it books of the Bible? Is it, are there 10 core Bible verses that you think that I want every kid to at least know these 10 core Bible verses? You choose what they are. Yeah, there's resources out there. You can Google it, but you can also choose, these are the dozen verses I want all my kids to know. And then make that your goal so that you can feel like, okay, we shot a lot of stuff at them. We did a lot of lessons. We went through curriculum, but this they know before they leave. Then the second phase is to work with your youth ministry to work on a transition. Now, we just did this here at my church. We had a Wednesday night youth where it was the first night that in our church, it's the fifth graders going into sixth grade. And so I went, we literally had a baton. And so the youth pastor welcomed them all. I came up, gave a challenge to the sixth graders. I gave a challenge to the older kids about embracing them, told some funny stories. And then I handed the baton to the youth pastor, and then he prayed, and we called it the passing of the baton night. And so you can do some strategic thing like that. In the past, we've even done where the youth pastor, you know, youth leaders came to kids' church one week, and we introduced them. We didn't do that here, but you know, think it through. Meet with the youth pastor. I've had past ministries where we were really strategic, where, you know, we did a one night overnight fourth and fifth grade retreat, and the youth leaders came to that. And then when they got into junior high, they did a two night retreat. And by high school, that's when they did a mission trip. And so, you know, think through what is the progression. I even had a youth pastor who was like, dude, don't do this event because that's one of our big events. But then they say, we've already done it. And I was like, okay, I won't do that event, even though I loved it. And so we worked together on even what types of events we did so that there was a progression of events, progression of privileges. And I wasn't stealing the thunder from some of his events, doing them with my preteens. And it's all just intentional planning and working on it. And you can also check out kidology.org/next-steps. That is a resource for a class that you can actually do with your kids to make sure they know the basics. And that goes through salvation, baptism, communion, and discipleship. And that's a 4-week class that I do with the kids in fourth or fifth grade with one parent. And they meet at church. They have some homework. They do it with the parents. And you know what's really cool? The parents say, I learned so much in that class. I call that stealth parent discipleship. The parents think they're doing it for the kids, but you tell the parents to do the work with the kids so that they know what the kids are learning. And the parents sometimes have never gone through those basics themselves. Either they're new believers, or they've just been going and sitting and listening to sermons, and they've never even done an intentional discipleship themselves. And so check that out. That's another great resource. There's a student version of that as well. Same exact content, just youthized. And that's also available at that /next-steps. Great, great question, Dana. All right, moving right along here. We got Rhonda noticing that many children are becoming distant or cold, she says, when it comes to worship. How do we counter that battle of entertain me, but don't try to move me from where I'm at spiritually, especially, she says, with the older kids? And several people here have recommended songs. Hey, one of the things I want to challenge is that we not evaluate a child spiritually by their outward worship. Yes, we want kids to worship the Lord enthusiastically and sincerely. But I'll tell you from my own personal experience, I am not a hand-raising worshiper. When I was in high school, I was into Petra and all this Christian rock that was like big in the 80s. And I would go to a Petra concert. I went to Newsboys concerts, and I just kind of stood there. I loved it. But to me, worship is very intellectual. It's not physical. It's not emotional. And so I'd be standing there like thoroughly loving it. And my friends would look at me and say, what's wrong with you? Aren't you having a great time? I'd be like, I'm having a great time. So I finally started just bouncing up and down. And I felt silly, but I was like, if I don't at least bounce up and down, my friends think there's something wrong with me. But I was listening to the lyrics. I was praying. I was totally into it. I just wasn't like, to me, in my opinion, I'm not saying this as a judgmental statement, but I was like, I'm not jumping around like a buffoon, all right? That was how I felt if I jumped up and down and waved my arms and I felt ridiculous doing that. What I'm saying is I did not think my friends were ridiculous. I was delighted that they were having a great time. That just wasn't me. And even as a kid, like, I didn't like the running in place and the jumping up and down. And I never did the motions, all right? I just stood there, all right? And so that's why I don't lead worship in my own kids' ministry. When I do have to do it, I do the motions because I need to model it. But I end up being kind of silly. Like, I end up doing the wrong motions and making the kids laugh. So I get enthusiastic worship leaders, and Paula and Sarah, they do an amazing job because that's just not my DNA. And I know there's kids who are wired like me. In fact, I know there's kids who don't even sing, but later their parents will tell me they're in the bathtub singing the worship songs. And so first I just have a caution to not evaluate a kid's heart based on their external expression of worship. That said, worship is contagious. So we do need to make sure those who leading it are having a blast, because fun is contagious. So get worship leaders up there who are having a blast, who are having fun. Do, and of course, encourage the kids to participate. Kids can all stand up. And so I do walk around, because the way I support the worship leaders is by walking around. And I do say, stand up, what are you doing? You look like a bump on a log, you know? And so I'll have them stand up. I don't make them do the motions, but I do have them stand up. But part of the way I do is friendly, you know, I'll take them by the hands and stand them up. And then I, you know, I'll kind of be silly with them and get them to engage in a friendly way. If I can tell they're having a bad day or something, then I'll be like, hey, are you all right? You know, I'll try to feel out, you know, if they're, you know, having a good time or whatever. But everyone worships differently. So have those upbeat songs. I love the worship shuffle. Go to kidology.org/shuffle, download that song. Our kids absolutely love it. There's a lot of worship shuffle songs out there that like have nothing to do with God. Like, I'm like, why are they even singing that in church? They're even like using the happy song and a bunch of songs that aren't even Christian. I'm like, come on, this is church. So that's a great song. It talks, even has the gospel in it. I love that song. But make sure you're doing some contemplative songs. In fact, did you know it's okay to play a worship song and have the kids just close their eyes and say, just listen to this song and allow the Holy Spirit to speak to you as you listen to this song? In fact, one of the greatest worship experiences I've ever done in church is I took a song by Dino and the Dynamos called This Is Love. It's a great song. It's a slow song. And he literally just sings, this is love, over and over and over again. There's some other lyrics, but it mostly is just says, this is love. And then I took the claymation movie of Jesus, and I think it's called Miracle Maker. And I edited it just the scene where Jesus dies on the cross, and they gamble for his clothes, they take his body down, they put it in the tomb, and he rises again. And I edited it to the length of that song. And for Easter, for our Easter service, I showed that video with the volume off. So there was no dialogue, the mouths were moving, but I used none of the audio from the movie. And I just showed that video clip, and I played Dino singing This Is Love. So the kids were visually watching Jesus being beaten and dying on the cross, being taken down, put in the tomb, and rising again. But they were listening to the song, This Is Love. And I turned out all the lights, and it was just, we had a big screen. And I just sat on the stage, and I was watching the kids. And there were tears going down the kids' cheeks. It was so beautiful, and it was so powerful, because they were watching
what's a very familiar story, right? We teach about the crucifixion and Jesus dying on the cross for our sins. We're teaching it all the time. But they experienced it in a whole new way. So get creative with worship. And don't define worship as just playing worship videos and singing and doing the motions. Be willing to try some different things. I'm always reminding kids, worship is not singing. Singing is a way that we worship. Worship is a show of worth. And anything we do that shows God how much he's worth to us is an act of worship. And so sometimes if we want kids to genuinely worship, we need to break the mold a little bit. And singing is an activity that's important. It's valuable. Talk about the lyrics. Ask kids about the lyrics after we sing it. Anticipate the lyrics. I use a lot of Rob Biaggi music. It's all on a Kidology because his lyrics are good. His lyrics are solid. His lyrics are actually deep, but not so deep you can't use them with kids. Like Before I Go, 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 I Stop is powerful. You're a VIP to G.O.D. His stuff is so good. In fact, I use Rob Biaggi music on Kidmin Talk, all right, as my intro and outro, with his permission, of course. Great question about worship. All right, Melissa, when the need arises, do you have a conversation about gender? We're going to skip that one. No, great question and very timely question. No, I do not discuss gender identity at all with the kids. She goes on to ask, how do we screen our leaders and workers, obviously, so they go along with our teaching. I've seen some discussions on Facebook about not using boys and girls and using kids and friends. I won't do that. I'm going to speak the truth boldly. Throw me in jail. I'm not going to lie to a child about their gender. In all honesty, I've not had to face that yet in my ministry. I know that time is probably going to come. I will deal with that with grace and with gentleness, but also with truth. And so I'm not going to tiptoe around that. And so I will work with parents. But I'm sorry, I am a pastor and I'm a Christian and I will speak in truth. And I'm not going to avoid hard truths because of people's feelings. All right, so that could be a whole different topic, and I might have just got somebody mad at me. I don't know, but I'm going to always side with truth, even if it's uncomfortable. Truth with grace, truth with love, truth with gentleness. But I'm always going to stick to truth. I'm never going to lie to a child or embrace something that's not true. Jesus was loving, but Jesus was always truthful. And that's where I've got to land. Now, the more important question is dealing with leaders. There's no way to know where every leader is on every topic. Watching their Facebook is a great way to find out. But there's two tiers of leaders. There's those who teach, who I absolutely will interview and talk to, ask them pointed questions. If they're teaching and they say something that's out of line, they're done teaching. They might still be able to be a helper, but they're not going to be teaching anymore. But volunteers just helping, you just got to kind of watch it and monitor that. But we do have a screening process. We do interview them. We do call references. But that's going to be tougher and tougher. A lot of people are being sucked into embracing the views of our world in the guise of kindness and grace and acceptance and inclusiveness and all that. And it's a mask for embracing the lies of our enemy. And it's sad and it's scary. Stephanie, can I coach energy? You can. You can also model it. You can also expect it. If you are stuck in a situation, and many people are, where they've got someone up front and they're boring the kids to death, then you need to make a change. And that can be tough. And I've had to do that. You can also start by shortening their time. And there's an old motto. My dad used to have this framed on the wall. I do, you watch. I do, you help. You do, I help. You do, I watch. And that is a training coaching formula. So if someone's not doing a good job, you take them out and you say, hey, I'm going to take this over. I want you to watch. And then you show how you want it done. All right. Then you say, hey, I'd like you to step up. I want you to just do the welcome. And then we're going to talk about it after. If they get up there and they're boring, say, okay, this was what was good. Here's what I need to be done different. I need you to bound up there I need you to tell a joke. I need you to smile, whatever it is. And they try it again. If they can't do it, they're in the wrong role. And you need to be bold enough to say that this is what I need in that role. You need to have job descriptions, all right? And you need to put someone where their gifts are being used effectively, all right? And sometimes it's a matter of shifting someone. No one likes being in the wrong place. Sometimes people think they're in the right place, but they're not. And that, unfortunately, is leadership, all right? So if a ho-hum personality, as you said, that should not be up front in front of children. And so my heart goes out to you if you need to make a change. But start by trying to coach and encourage and model. Sometimes you can put someone next to them. It can be an Abbott and Costello. It can be good cop, bad cop, but it can kind of play off each other. And that can salvage it, especially if the kids really love that person. That can kind of help. And that may lighten them up because they may be reacting to the bubbly, humorous personality of the other person. And that can salvage it because their heart might be caught by the kids, but they'll be laughing at the other person. And that might help as well. All right, let's see here. Should you, could you, would you encourage kids to bring their Bibles back and home from church? You mentioned, Stephanie, that you have them leave their Bibles there. Everyone does it different. I have the kids bring their Bibles to church because I want them to use their Bibles at home. I love that you have them earn a Bible, but I have them bring their Bibles to church. They get stickers for bringing their Bible. They get the training cards, kidology.org/TGA stands for The Great Adventure. They get Great Adventure cards for bringing their Bible, for coming, for answering questions. If they collect the whole thing, they get an Action Comic Bible. If they already have the Action Comic Bible, they get an Action Study Bible. If they already have an Action Study Bible, they get an Action Devotional Bible, all right? No kids ever had all two or all three. So, but I have them bring their Bibles to church. You say it's embarrassing to have aloners. To me, that's not embarrassing. That's awesome. We have a big bin with the loaner Bibles, and we do our sword drills. The kids all run up and grab Bibles. I have volunteers offering to buy loaner Bibles. So I have the Amazon link for the cheapest one that's a kid-friendly one that says Holy Bible on the cover. I want attractive loaners. I don't like the missing covers. I don't like the fine print, the King James. No offense to you King James lovers out there. I know some of you love your King James, and that's totally cool. But I want a kid-friendly translation, big print. If you put in the comments, I'll give you the link to the Bible I buy. Bright yellow cover, says Holy Bible, looks very attractive. I think the Bible should be attractive to kids. So great question. Catherine asked about still teaching an emergency and keeping account. Have an emergency plan, all right? Know what the plan is. Fire alarm goes off. Where are the kids going? Always know a count of the kids. You should be able to pop into every room and say, how many kids do you have? And if they start counting, they're in trouble. They need to know how many kids are in the room so that if there's an emergency, little kids, they grab that rope. They know exactly where to go. Parents need to know in an emergency, they do not go get their child. They evacuate to the adult area. They may not pick up their kids outside. You create a firm perimeter. If a parent comes, sorry, you may not pick up your kid. The kids will be picked up in the rooms when we go back into the rooms when the building is secured, because we're not going to have a child. We have to give an account for all the kids. I had a dad irate, mad at me during the last pickup, and I said, I'm sorry, I cannot release your kid until we go back to the building. I'm responsible for every child. We'll release the kids when we go back in the building. He thanked me later. In the moment, he was not happy. But you have to have those evacuation policies. You should have a sign, a picture inside each room of where the kids are to go. It should be separate from the parents. You need to have a completely different place. I think it's 150 feet away from the building. Fire department comes. They check out the building. There's usually no fire. Someone pulled the alarm. A youth pastor did a smoke bomb. Worship pastor did fog. Something set off the fire alarm. When the building's cleared, they come back in. Parents come get their kids. The leader may decide to release the kids with the tags like normal from that pickup area, but not until you make that decision. And tell your leaders, do not release any children until I authorize it. I'm responsible for the safe release of the kids. Because parents are going to try. They're like, oh, church is over. It's a disaster. I'm going to grab my kids and we're going to get to the restaurants quickly. Beat the lines. You just can't do that. So have a plan and work the plan and be proactive. And your boss will be impressed when that emergency happens that the kids ministry is the only place that knew, the only ministry that knew what was going on, had a plan and executed it smoothly. That'll be great. All right. Last question is from Doug. And Doug, it's a great question. I think you had the right answer. He asked about Bible characters who have questionable pasts or professions, such as adulterers or prostitutes. Do you mention that to the kids? And you got it. You don't. I remember as a kid, I always wondered what adultery was because my teacher told me that adultery was something that was called adultery because it was something only adults could do. And I was like, what could only an adult do? You know, I just knew it was like adult. It was called an adult sin. I was like, what can an adult do that a kid can't do? It's like a kid could rob a bank. You know, a kid can steal. What can only an adult do? I was intrigued. But I just knew it was something only an adult could do. So I didn't have to worry about it. There was like only 9 commandments that applied to kids. And then like the prostitute, anytime I've talked about I'm trying to remember the one that we always talk about. Anyway, I've just said a lady had a really bad reputation because everyone knew she had done some bad stuff. And kids are satisfied with that. I mean, I read through the Bible as a kid, and I don't even remember wondering what that was. I don't even remember asking my parents what it was. It's just a big word. I didn't know what it meant. So I don't stress over it too much. But yeah, if I'm reading the text, I often will read the word. And if a kid did raise their hand and say, what is that? I just say it was an occupation that was illegal, you know, and they go, oh, OK. So, yeah, truthful answers. I never lie. Truthful answers. But obviously, you don't need to get too detailed. All right. So I think you said avoiding certain information does not change the message. Absolutely. So great, great answer. So I'm going to hit the closing music. Thank you, everybody, for your questions. I hope this has been helpful to you. If you missed submitting a question, that's what the Facebook group is there for. So please feel free anytime to drop a question in there. I enjoy answering those. Kidology is loaded with help. On some of those broad categories, from special needs to recruiting to management, there's so much on Kidology. It's deep. If you hit that idea button at the top of the website, it will open up the zones, over 60 zones, 60 categories loaded with information. Do yourself a favor and check that out. I look forward to next time when we get to hang out here on Kidmin Talk. Thanks for joining me.